Greetings and welcome to the March Monthly Advisor Call. As a reminder, this call is being recorded Thursday, March 19, 2020. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Barry Mandinac. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. As the announcer said, I'm Barry Mandinac, Executive Vice President and Head of Distribution at Virtus Investment Partners. We want to welcome everybody to the Virtus Monthly Call. Today, we're featuring Newfleet's Chief Investment Officer and President, Dave Albright. Dave, welcome, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Barry, thank you for having me.
Okay, well, why don't we dive right into it? I know everybody's got a lot going on. So with the ongoing coronavirus situation and the global market volatility, can you talk a bit about what the risks are now and what you see on a go-forward basis?
Absolutely, Barry. You know, starting the year, we had a whiteboard in my office. On the board, I put the risks in the market. They were the elections, global trade, geopolitical risk. Then out of left field comes the coronavirus and the oil wars with both Russia and Saudi Arabia. Right now, I think the market risks, as everybody well knows, an economic downturn both in the U.S. and globally, monetary policy effectiveness. We're in a zero interest rate environment, and where can rates go from here? And then the most critical is the health risk with the virus. In 2008, the financial system problems turned into an economic problem. In 2020, we have a medical health problem turning into an economic problem that swiftly affected the financial system. Fear, panic, the unknown, very fluid. In 3 weeks, the market market technicals went from the best we had seen in years to the worst that we have seen in years. So obviously, there's obviously risk out there, Barry, that we have to deal with. As far as liquidations, correlations when you have a market meltdown like this, you know, they typically go to one, right? All people sell what they can, not necessarily what they want to. And it's very typical for a risk-off environment. You know, those type of periods tend to be short-term. And this market right now is creating some of the best opportunities I've seen in my 27-year career, and I've only seen before in 2008. Markets are functioning. Limited issuance, but deals are coming in investment grade. For example, today, Barry, we had UPS, MetLife, JP Morgan. Over the last few days, we've had Exxon, Pepsi, Verizon, Encore, and a few others. Liquidity, which is the big question, is lower, but things are trading. And, you know, obviously liquidity even goes to be sector specific. High quality liquid assets are trading. Obviously, the trend has been down. In the last 3 weeks, any sale has been a good sale. All that being said, from a valuation perspective, things haven't been better in quite some time. From a valuation perspective.
No, that's interesting. How do you feel about the actions that the Fed and the central banks around the world have taken?
Sure. I mean, aggressively responding, swiftly, robustly on the monetary side. Every central bank is doing what they can to ensure the functioning of the financial markets, obviously to aid in the recovery. And on the monetary side, you know, it's easy to get a group of, you know, governors together and come up with quantitative easing, rate cuts, backstop for the money market, commercial paper and repo market. The big question is fiscally. Obviously, that's very political. That will take longer, take definitely more than one try, incremental steps. You know, my thought was when the Fed put their policy in place of $700 billion buybacks, both in the mortgage and the treasury market, that was very predictable. They typically buy AAAs. My feeling was that they should have been buying risk assets, similar to what the ECB and the BOJ has done in the past, buying corporates, buying equities, and so forth. You know, and then I guess the question comes, will there be a shutdown? And what will the ultimate impact of that be? Treasury issuance has to come. We'll see that. You know, we've seen volatility in the treasury market, which has come from some of the leverage players unwinding, people taking profits when on a temporary basis you can get cash at 1.3%. And then, you know, I think on a positive note, much different than 08, you have the banks that are extremely well capitalized. And I'd throw one more thing out there. Right now, the government's focus is on the human healthcare aspect of what's going on, containments and so forth. Those are typically GDP negative. The next round, if they can get that under control, is going to be stimulative actions and to get GDP back on track.
Okay, great. In terms of the credit market, how do you see the spreads and how do they compare to historic levels?
Yeah, I mean, right now, spreads are the cheapest across risk and spread sectors going back only to 2008. Current levels suggest it's an entry time, an entry point. However, we are patiently waiting, you know, obviously for some market stability, something we're watching very, very closely. But if you look at corporate high yield, we're at 901. You went back significantly below the ultimate high point back in 08, but we're approaching 08 levels. Emerging markets, you know, at 587, let's say 600. Again, off the 850 of the 08 levels, but approaching there. Bank loans right now trading at pretty much intrinsic value or recovery values. We have an $81 price in the loan market. They're trading at 700 off. You know, anytime we ever saw anything at that level, that was an entry point. And then even corporate high quality, you know, which sort of was the last leg to fall, is now trading a little over 300 off. So all great entry points based on a you know, spread basis only.
That's interesting. In terms of preferreds, there's been a lot of selling there.
Yeah, there has. You know, preferreds are subordinated in the capital structure, Barry. So you have to go down in the cap structure. Obviously, you give up the protection of security and being senior in the capital structure versus secured debt, either a loan or secured debt. And then even you take subordination to subordinated debt. So there you're taking an aggressive bet. We did have preferreds in our portfolios as much as 10% in the multi-suite, as much as 5% in the short-term suite. We basically took profits on those long before the start of the year, something that we would definitely entertain looking at again because from a valuation perspective, preferreds look really good. And I had mentioned the banks are well capitalized. Most of the preferred issuance is in the financial sector. Right now, we have little or no exposure to preferreds, but something we're looking at on our buy list.
On a sector basis, energy has been getting most of the headlines, and I'm happy to hear about that, but also other sectors that you feel are really challenged currently.
Yeah, I mean, high-yield energy specifically, I know Joe Chernova's talked about this quite a bit, but high-yield energy is off about 41%. Triple C's in high-yield are off 22.5%. But anything in the leisure-related or travel transportation segment of the market has gotten pounded, and that's both in IGN high-yield, gaming, hotels, movie theaters, cruise lines, airlines, restaurants, retail, REITs, and even local currency for that matter. You know, pretty much all of which we had underweights to with the exception of gaming or had, you know, especially in energy, we had underweighted energy a long time ago. But, you know, our bias, especially on the loan space is, you know, avoid restaurants, avoid retail, avoid REITs, and especially in the high yield and also the investment grade sector. Some of the stuff we've really been avoiding. They've come to really attractive levels, but again, you have to know the length and duration of the virus and what happens. And, you know, the other thing that it comes down to, Barry, is which industries are going to get bailed out. And then you have to, I think, two other, you know, things that we're going to look at very hard is, is there a permanent change in consumer behavior? You know, they don't want to go to any large gatherings anymore and so forth. Is there a permanent change to corporate balance sheets? A lot of people want to go to the triple B space. They want to lever their balance sheets to lever their equity. The problem now is, you know, with one, two bad quarters, you fall into the below investment grade segment. And then you have forced sales by maybe insurance companies, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, or whatever it may be. For me, as a multi-sector guy, that's low-hanging fruit, as long as we feel there's viable, you know, business there and good cash flow characteristics and so forth, and a liquidity tunnel that makes sense. But on a portfolio basis, we really haven't liked energy, been extremely volatile. Now energy prices, you know, going below that, you know, to an 18-year low in the 20s, maybe a little rally today, but it's something we've avoided. Too much volatility, too much uncertainty in the energy space.
So I know advisors look to you as that multi-sector expert, given your 25-plus years of experience and track record and so forth, outsourcing complexity of navigating the world's credit markets. At a high level, how would you describe the way your portfolios are currently positioned, and where are you starting to really start to nibble for opportunities going forward?
Yeah, I mean, we came into the crisis, you know, de-risking the portfolios, and that's the process we started on almost 18 months ago. And that was purely based on valuations, Barry. A lot of stuff that it, you know, had run just got to be so full in value that we decided to get away from the corporate space where we thought there was risk. You know, that includes bank loans, high yield, and investment grade, diversifying into some of the structured spaces. But really, the key to our structured investments was, and we knew what happened where a lot of people got burned back in 08 when you had a sell-off in structure, they were doing the subordinated pieces. And when we saw over the last 3 months, subordinated tranches multi-times oversubscribed, and we knew that was, you know, that was a recipe for obviously a lot of pain. And now you're starting to get the SEC looking into some of those funds that bought that type of paper and wanting to mark to market those illiquid securities. Well, good news for us is we stayed up in quality, not only with our high yield exposure, which was primarily double Bs and bank loans and high yield, but definitely within our securitized product, the up in quality trade. staying in the AA, AAA tranches, you know, the most liquid that we could monetize and get into some of these other sectors. So I would just state, though, in the last 27 years, our funds are at the low in exposure in the high-yield market, the loan market, below investment grade as a whole, and in EM. And then we virtually have no local currency exposure. That was something that we had decided to do on a conscious basis. We decided dollar assets made the most sense. In the securitized space, as I had mentioned, you know, a lot of our competitors have the unrated, illiquid commercial mortgage-backed securities. These, you know, subordinated tranches are, you know, obviously in jeopardy. Those are something we don't own. And valuations are at buy levels, but we are cautiously waiting for what I'd say more signs of stability related to the virus. And we have a written buy list that we are looking at right now, talking to my head of credit, Kyle Jennings, Frank Osino on the loan space, Pete Lanigan in the emerging market space, Ryan Junk in investment grade, Eric Hess in high yield, you know, having daily meetings on valuations. And we've written a buy list of the best opportunities. And these are the best opportunities we've seen since 08. And it goes across all sectors, not unique to any one sector, but probably high yield being the best opportunity now. Emerging markets coming in very close. Munis. You know, munis, I was just on CNBC maybe 4 weeks ago talking about how overvalued high yield munis were in the muni market. The muni market's gotten pounded. But now it looks like not only on a percentage basis of treasuries, but on a pure valuation basis, some amazing opportunities. Corporate and securitized, I throw those both in there to a lesser extent. And then bank loans, you know, that's one we're looking at. You probably have to be a little careful there. We're down to $81 price. Virtually retail is out of that market. If the CLO bid comes back, liabilities get a little more, you know, attractively priced. If, you know, it could take some time. A loan market is going to be a home run of an opportunity. But we're looking at sectors, industries, and companies, identifying those that have a liquidity tunnel that I think makes sense. You know, those that have good cash flow generation characteristics, those that have bank lines in place where they can draw down, product life cycle, which is not less than the term of their debt maturities. So something we're looking at, you know, inside and out with our credit team on a daily basis. And there is a lot of opportunity. And I really stress a lot of great opportunities out there.
Well, you know, in terms of these opportunities, which sound so compelling, how much cash do you have in the portfolio? And are you in a position to take advantage of these opportunities?
Yeah, Barry, the way I would characterize it is as liquidity in the portfolio. So I would throw cash, I would throw treasuries, and I would throw agency mortgage backs in there, things that you could liquidate. And I know that there's been a little volatility in the treasury market due to leveraged unwinds of some of the parity funds that had, you know, that had unwind, some of the two-time levered products out there, people wanting to sell duration. But I would say that we're somewhere between 10 to 11%. If you include all those sectors, I would say securitized, even though we've gone to securitize, I wouldn't call that extreme liquidity, but we have been able to monetize a lot of that. So right now we sit about 10 to 11%. If we need to, structure in the shorter duration accounts would probably provide another 10% in the short-term suite, maybe about 5% in the multi-sector intermediate duration suite. So we definitely have fuel for the fire, without question.
That's great. And in terms of your performance over the last month or so, how do you feel you've done, and where do you see in terms of the possible downside from here in your strategies?
Yeah, I would say that I think we performed as we would have expected. In periods of flight to quality, we'll underperform, but we'll roar back, and you can go back in the history of the fund when you see, you know, us getting hit on flight to quality periods. If you look at over the next multiple periods, we roar back, you know, and it's really because of our deep relative value bias, a team that's been together doing this for nearly three decades. And, you know, I just say based on valuations, you know, we're looking very good right now from an attractiveness standpoint. The downside versus 08, well, we're more than less half the risk that we had in 08. We're probably at 40% of the risk that we had in 08, and most of that risk is dramatically up in quality bias. So I think, you know, we couldn't be positioned any better. I think the last week, one of the kicks our strategy was high quality got hit. And that was just, you know, that was sort of the last leg of the downfall. So high quality got hit. But really right now, I think we're in a great position to take advantage of when this market settles down, to get our feet wet, to do dollar cost averaging, what we're very good at. We're never jumping with both feet. We're a dollar cost averager. Can't time the market highs and lows. But valuations, I'll really stress that we haven't seen it since 08. It always provides periods of opportunity. Barry, we've been through as a group 1994, 1998, 2002, 2008, 2011, 2016, 2018. So all sell-offs where this has happened before. You know, a lot of funds go back to 2009, so they hadn't seen the peso devaluation, the seven rate increases, and the high-yield debacle of of 1994. They haven't seen 1998 when long-term capital imploded. They haven't seen 2002 when you had $260 billion of telecom defaults. And they didn't even see the subprime crisis of 2008. We've lived through all those. We've done this before. We've been here, and we're prepared to really do what we do best, find relative value in the market, give that back to our clients, you know, after a period of volatility.
No, that's great. If you're a wealth management person, you're a financial advisor, and you're trying to build a diversified fixed income portfolio today, for people who are trying to maintain income and preserve their income through retirement, given where yields are on treasuries today and high-grade corporates and so forth, how do you balance the need for a cushion against declining equity markets with return generation in terms of building a diversified fixed income portfolio for a nearly retired or a retired investor? What are your thoughts about that?
I would just say that the backup in spreads that we've seen over the last 3 weeks, you know, future return expectations look dramatically, dramatically more attractive than just a month ago. You know, and I would also throw a caveat that active management is critical, not buying an index where you're stuck in energy, you're stuck in triple C's, and relative value investing, where we have liquidity within our portfolio. We're not stuck in one sector. We can actually monetize some of the other sectors where we stayed up in quality. You need a diversified portfolio. Don't be fooled. You need fixed income. And then relative value investing in a multi-sector strategy, which we've been doing for 3 decades, should be a component of any well-diversified investment portfolio.
Yeah, I would add to that. You know, the typical client can't afford to sit with 30 or 40% of their assets or 50% of their assets in securities earning next to nothing. They simply can't afford it. So they need some return generation, but they can't get to equity volatility. So I think all roads lead to a responsible, prudent allocation to credit. And who better to do that with than Newfleet and you, Dave? So we really appreciate these observations and this time with us on the call today. I want to thank all the advisors on this call because the advisors have done a great job of placing the assets properly and then helping us keep those assets on the books through these tumultuous times, and you guys have been great. And I think, you know, what we've asked and what we've been working with you on and helping you with is having these advisors help the clients distinguish between volatility and loss and risk. And so, you know, the volatility, obviously price movements go up and down, and that happens. As Warren Buffett said, he didn't lose any money in 2008 because he didn't sell, and he stuck around and waited for the eventual rebounds, and that's what we hope, working with you all and Dave's team and their relative value skill set, we can get to the other side and really do right by you and your clients. So thank you for that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, then I would like to thank everybody for taking the time out of your day to join us. For additional market commentary and portfolio-specific insights, please visit us at our website at Virtus.com. If you have any additional questions or would like further information, please don't hesitate to give us a call at 1-800-243-4361. I'll repeat that, 1-800-243-4361. Dave, I want to thank you very much for your time today, and thank everybody again for joining us.
Thank you, Barry.